Set down your sleepy water and your Mr. Whistle. Take off that raincoat and grab a cold beer. It's time to have a real talk about pediatric dentistry. You're listening to Bruise and Tiny Teeth, the unfiltered pediatric dentistry podcast.
All right, Chris. Well, I'm going to just start by saying that I have some FOMO and I'm a little bit jealous because as soon as we opened up this podcast, you held up a little two fingers of bourbon and you're sipping on it here. And then I was like mad at myself that I scheduled this over a lunch hour and I still have a couple dozen patients left in the day because it's been a rough morning. So a little touch of bourbon to take the edge off would in theory be pretty awesome to end the day here.
Well, you know, my grandma used to put bourbon on the gums, right? I'm sure yours did too.
Yeah.
Before we knew any better.
Yeah, parents in this part of Missouri bring that little trick up a lot and they ask, and I'm like, well, I technically in good faith as a pediatric dentist and healthcare professional can't tell you that I advise that. But yeah, that gets brought up quite a bit. But it sounds like we were talking, you're a bourbon and baby teeth guy. So you, and actually that's where you and I kind of briefly met the first time. And it was a quick conversation, but it was pretty impactful for me. So maybe we can start our conversation by just reflecting on like your relationship with bourbon and baby teeth, because I know you're fairly involved and you go to those, but tell me about I guess how you kind of linked up with all those guys and how you got so involved with BAPT.
Yeah. So that's kind of the highlight of our year. Bourbon and Baby Teeth is probably the most fun event I think we get to be a part of. We've been involved since near the very beginning. I think their very first year was kind of their test run and not a lot of people knew about it. There might've been 50 or so of the, what they call OGs. But we came on the very next year when it became a really, you know, more organized event. So I'll give them a shout out. So I've got the fifth anniversary deluxe edition Easy Rider bourbon that they were so kind to hand out and give us a few extra bottles of as sponsors. But we have a lot of fun sponsoring the main evening at that event. It's always a blast, and it's been in Louisville I think for every year for the last 6 years, but. Next year, it's going to New Orleans.
Yeah, that's exciting. I was just saying that I'm hoping I can snag some tickets and come out because I always have the best podcasts when I can do them in person. And they're even better when you have like a real drink in hand in person that you can like cheers to. The conversation is just so much better. And it's a good group of guys out there. So hopefully, in theory, I can get out and catch you out in Bourbon and Baby Teeth this year, which will be good. But I know, like I was saying, when we first met, I walked by and I think at the time, you know, you were there with your booth. And I was chatting briefly, but it was right after I opened my practice. And, you know, we're going to kind of get into the weeds of some hot financial topics today and stuff, like some unpopular financial opinions that you hold, but they were pretty impactful for me. And one of them was we were talking about practice loans and startup and debt being, you know, when you're a young pediatric dentist, you know, it seems like there's an infinite amount of uses for your cash. You know, you've got student loans, you've need emergency funds, you're trying to start a practice, you're trying to buy a house and all these things. But you were a bit more of an advocate at a time when everybody was like, take on all this debt, take on all this debt. I always thought it was kind of interesting how you were more of a, you know, you've been maybe a little bit, I'm afraid to say more cautious with debt, but like understanding like focusing on cash flow and being cash flow positive, having extra cash to reinvest in things versus just like blindly taking out debt to buy assets when maybe it doesn't make the most sense. So you just you have a little bit of a different opinion. And so maybe I thought we could start there by just talking about maybe your background and then kind of some more of your philosophies as far as like, and I'm going to get into it more with some situations, but let's start by talking about your background and then how you've kind of developed your business and some of the core like fundamental principles of your accounting and financial advising business.
Sure. Well, I think at the foundation of the core of everything that I do is really cash flow and cash flow planning. And my background is, you know, I came out of undergrad college during the Great Recession of 2008. Actually, was graduating on time in 2007 with a real estate degree, got a front row seat through the projects that we were doing in that program of the turmoil that was about to happen and just felt uneasy. So went to my advisor and asked, what other degree can I get with the least amount of classes? And they said something like risk management and insurance. And I was like, what the heck is that? So the insurance component is what got me a job. And I was trained to be an actuary or an underwriter. The risk management component is what I've used the most, that got me working in a dental practice eventually. But out of college, there were no jobs in 2008, and the only jobs were in sales. So I took a job with an insurance company, and they suggested to me that I go travel dental schools and do lunch and learns to sell disability insurance to dentists. And so I'm sure in your day, you were having lunch and learns like that all the time. And we ended up having a strong team of guys that traveled 14 different dental schools. And I did that for about 5 years, but was, you know, wanted to be do more than just that, and took an interest, decided to take an interest in the business model of dentistry. I'm born and raised native of Atlanta. And so we have the Hinman Dental Conference in our backyard here. Bought a ticket 1 year, walked every aisle, every booth, and took a bunch of people to lunch, asked them what they did in dentistry, and kind of started learning the business side. And I picked a person that was referred to me. In order to get their loan to buy the practice, they had to get their disability insurance. So I was helping them get that. I could tell this guy was just acted differently. He was older. He was about 38, buying his very first business. Felt like he was, you know, he was in his second career, felt like he was late behind the game. I could just tell he was different. So I was taking some practice management courses from someone I met at the Hinman, making Excel sheets, and I wanted to see if this stuff really worked. And I asked him if I could come sit in his business one day a month. And it was a very odd question, and I'm so grateful now. I mean, he said yes. It was the greatest experiment of my life. Ended up working there for almost 3 years. Almost tripled the business, went from 600,000 collections when he bought it to about 1.7 million in about 2.5 years. And since then, he's still my client. He's become my best friend. He's my personal dentist. And he's now got 3 locations. They do a massive amount of collections. They've got like 8 associates. So I've seen it from really, really tiny, small practice all the way to, you know, building a full enterprise. And that has now been a 15-year run of just kind of personal hands-on experience. Was along that path after I was hired to sell the insurance. A lot of these insurance companies want you to become full-fledged financial advisors. So I went down that path and got investment licensed and was doing what I thought was right and was in the traditional financial planning. But along the way, when I was working in that practice, I purchased some real estate in the college town that was nearby, was collecting rent, and basically saw what I feel like is the big fraud that is traditional financial planning, teaching everybody to accumulate a bunch of money, a nest egg, and then one day retire and deplete it and be careful not to run out of money. I was taught the 4% retirement rule, and that's kind of since been debunked, but I debunked it myself when I bought some real estate and started collecting rents and was able to generate more than 4% off the assets that I bought. And it gave me income and cash flow. And that's really what everybody's retirement is truly about. It's not about a number. It's about income and cash flow for life. Because as long as you're living, things are going to cost money and they're going to cost more and more money over time. So I started implementing, you know, personally what I felt worked. And I felt like I couldn't tell people to lock all their money up into retirement accounts and just save the money up, because my financial planning training, as we get on this topic of debt, taught me to tell people that, you know, you don't need to pay off your home mortgage. That's one of your greatest personal income tax deductions is the interest on your home mortgage. And you don't always need to be aggressive paying off your debts, because if the interest rate on the debt is lower than what you can get in the market, maybe that's not a smart thing. Most people don't put enough pen to paper and run the math and run like an amortization schedule and see how much compound guaranteed interest they have scheduled, especially on the longer term. You know, interest rate's actually a trick, but that's my path. I've kind of worked in and out of dental practices over the last 12 years or so. And then I worked under some really large consultants, learned a lot through them. But when I worked in that practice, it was kind of frustrating. Every year I had to fire the CPA. I could not get financials on time. I was not being explained, you know, what our tax burden was in a way that I could understand. And I learned that they didn't really know much about the business of dentistry. So couldn't find it. So had to create it. stumbled into a CPA who could speak my language. I kind of described the void that I saw in the marketplace. And in late 2017, near the beginning of 2018, we launched Profi 2020 Dental CPAs. And that's where we've been at since then. So
cool. So like your current business model then, just to clarify, you guys do, you have a team of CPAs and you do, so you kind of do a combo of like the accounting side of things and wealth planning and financial advising kind of all in one package. Is that kind of what the service you offer to clients?
Well, not quite. So I do have a family of businesses that I own around dentistry. The Profi as the CPA firm is strictly proactive tax planning and of course tax filing, and then managerial accounting. So that's using accounting data to teach you about your specific business of dentistry, what changes you can make to maybe improve it or make it more profitable. Accounting doesn't generate new revenue, but we can give you all of the tips that you may need to explore to help you increase that revenue and increase profit. The word that you said that I didn't like, which is why I said not exactly, is the whole wealth. I think you either said wealth management or something like that. So I am not investment licensed. I dropped that once I found it to be a fraud, in my opinion. And I do some financial consulting for a lot of our clients on a separate engagement, but I make them pay a fee so I can tell them the truth. A lot of times I'm telling people to stop doing what they're doing, stop maxing out the 401k, you know, sometimes tell them borrow from the 401k, cash out the brokerage account, pay off a debt, free up the cash flow. And that's the really important part, is that, you know, I don't think that it's wise to diversify your cash flow too much. I think you have to be very clear on the things that you want in life and what your end goals are, and go all in on those things. Yeah. So
I like that summary. That was a good line you just kind of ended with there. So I was able to collect my thoughts a bit more after my long rambling when I first got going. And so I was going to maybe structure some questions and or some situations for you to kind of give listeners a bit more of a view of some of your perspectives and things. So, you know, obviously I've got like dental students, I've got some residents listening, I've got young dentists that are practice owners, and I've got some dentists that are a little bit more seasoned that are maybe thinking about expanding and growing. And so let's take out a nugget for each of them and talk about some of these situations individually. So maybe if we start with like a student loan conversation. So if we put ourselves in a perspective of, you know, we're either a D4 or a young resident, you know, we're about ready to get out of dental school, and you've got $300,000 or $400,000 in debt, but with higher current interest rates, maybe we've got a lot of student loans in that 6-8%. Maybe they're there or have just gotten out and are starting to work and starting to have some cash come in. And we're thinking to ourselves, okay, maybe I'm not really interested in being a practice owner. I work at a DSO. Maybe that's not an immediate goal right now. But the question of, do I pay down my student loans now, or do I start investing for retirement, or like putting away 401k money, or do I start putting away money into a high yield savings account to plan on buying a practice later on? You know, I feel like the argument was easier back when student loans were, I think when I was battling mine, like 4, maybe 5%, and you were getting 10% return on the market. But now student loans are at 7 or 8% of risk-free return, paying off that interest versus putting money into the markets, which you can always argue might be a little bit questionable or higher risk. But now that gap is a lot narrower. And then you start taking into effect things like interest being tax deductible or investments being taxed higher if they're in, you know, not in tax advantage accounts like 401k. So, what would your advice be, or what are some of your thoughts in terms of the making the decision? Do you pay off the higher student, the student loan rate to try to free up some cash flow, or do you put some money away for investing, like the low hanging fruit, or do you not tackle any of it and save up cash in a high yield savings account to plan on other big purchases down the road? Like, how do you advise that person?
Okay, this is great. So the normal path is you're gonna be in dental school or residency. And somebody along the way, whether it's a friend, family, or financial advisor, somebody along the way is going to say, hey, you're going to be a dentist. You're going to make a six-figure income. That's going to be great. You're going to have great income your entire career. You need to make sure that you start saving, which I agree with. But then they'll immediately say, well, you need to start investing as early as possible. And what they really mean is investing in the stock market. Okay, so whether that's Dave Ramsey saying that or one of those other people, and that's kind of where I start to part ways, because you're not in control of that kind of return. And that strategy is in the traditional financial planning of accumulate the money and then one day deplete it. I also don't like retirement accounts because you're signing up to pay taxes for the rest of your life. So while you get a little bit of a deduction today, you're literally signing up. The government created those accounts so that they could have tax revenue forever. They're going to force you to take it out at age 72. But back to the basics, this would be my advice. Your number one goal should be to work on your income. So to maximize your earning potential. If that means it's as an associate, you know, I think that whether you're an associate or practice owner, I think your first goal should be to focus on, can you make yourself $1 million a year producer? Okay, can you produce $83,333 a month, okay, in net adjusted production? And it'd be wise to try to do that for somebody else first so that you could build your confidence and you would learn along the way, you know, how many patients are you going to have to see? What kind of procedure mix are you going to have? And, you know, what does it take for you to be able to produce at that high level? Now, in pedo, I think it's a lot easier than it is in GP to hit those numbers, especially amongst associates. But investing any money in yourself first to learn or to invest further in your clinical skill set, any training, whether that's, you know, going beyond just the dentistry and maybe adding, you know, early orthodontics or something to your skill set, or adding maybe tongue ties, investing in yourself first and foremost is going to give you the best return. Then I advise all my clients, keep this very simple. Save cash and pay off debt. Save cash and pay off debt. Don't listen to the outside noise about what you're missing out on in return. You need cash in order to invest. Okay. What you don't want to do is get on what I call the IV drip and get your cash flow, your income and your cash flow automated to some brokerage account or 401k that, you know, you don't have your personal life cash flow and expenses and everything in place. You're going to have that required student loan payment. We do need to pay it off. But first and foremost, you got to manage your cash flow, and you're going to need more than one bank account to do that. But the save cash and pay off debt concept, you can't go all in on paying off debt. You'll have no cash, right? You'll have no cash to invest. You'll have no cash for any kind of emergency. I try to say, after you've identified what your core personal bills are, any overage, one third of it, try to push it to cash savings. The other two thirds of it, maybe target one debt at a time. The cash, when it comes down to investments or things to invest in, I only want to invest in things that are cash flow producing. And there's really only three categories I can think of. I've never been able to get anybody to come up with a category outside of this. These categories are general enough. I think the best investment beyond yourself is a business. And not everybody's cut out to be a business owner. And you may not always make more money if you're a business owner, if you manage it poorly. But a business has a great return, okay? And it doesn't have to necessarily even be the business of dentistry, but the tax code is built for businesses and real estate. And so that's the first place to think of investing as a business. The next thing that needs to be on everybody's list is real estate, and that's income producing real estate. It must have a cash flow. Your house does not count. That's just an expense. And then the third category of where you can put your money is just your traditional investments that you can get through, you know, again, financial advisors and the stock market and things like that. I have the least amount of money in traditional investments. I primarily only invest in businesses and real estate. And those give me new cash flow. I think of it as building my cash flow machine. That's what we should all be obsessive on. How do we build our cash flow machine? How can we duplicate, or how can we create another stream of income? Your working income is your first form of income. It's your most important in the beginning. You do need to protect it. You do need to maximize it. But it's your most taxed form of income. And it is your trading time for money. So you will not have freedom of time and money if your only source of income is your working income. It takes time, and that's the painful part. We live in a very microwave society where people want immediate gratification. They want to just find that thing, buy it, and they, you know, have that income. You're going to have to save your cash for down payment. You're going to have to explore opportunities and kiss a lot of frogs. But over time, and you know, we have this saying, People, I think, overestimate what they can accomplish in 1 year, but they vastly underestimate what they can accomplish in 10 years. Okay, you have to have a long-term vision. And over time, you should be saving that cash to buy some sort of asset, business, real estate, or traditional investment, as long as it creates a new cash flow stream that takes the risk off of your working income. And it gives you the power to potentially, you know, retire sooner or work less by your choice. Instead of having to work 4 days a week, you might dial it back to 3 days or 2 days as your option, right? But that's how simple I try to keep it. In the beginning, out of dental school, invest in yourself. You get the best return to maximize your income. But after that, save cash, pay off debt. And cash just burns a hole in people's pocket. They think, you know, gosh, it's not making any return. Well, it's way different today than when I came out in the Great Recession. I'm getting like 5.5% in the money market. I've never seen that since I've been out of undergrad. That's a great return. People back then would have said, yeah, I'll take 5% for the rest of my life. And then, you know, we live in the United States of amnesia. The market comes back and everybody gets bullish and they start, you know, chasing those returns again. But the stock market is something that is not guaranteed. I've seen plenty of people's accounts evaporate. It's something that you're not in control of. Fears that are coming out of something happening in China and how that affects people here. And your nest egg, your savings in that type of vehicle, if it's at risk, can't evaporate. I like hard assets, things that you know, it's not just paper money, not just digital money. Mm-hmm.
I had one thing you said that I thought was interesting to reflect on, but you were talking about the tax code. And as I learn more about this, I know you're familiar with this as well, but the longer you become a business owner and you start looking at other endeavors and you start to talk with accountants and you look at your tax returns, you kind of realize that our tax system is structured in a way to benefit people that reinvest in either hard assets, businesses, or real estate that houses businesses like commercial real estate. Like, you know, you've got the highest tax, like the most tax money you can make seems to be the dollar that you have to go bust your ass for and work for, that active income. And then you get kind of investment and then passive income, which is taxed way lower at capital gains rates. And it's interesting the more you learn about it, how our tax code, that's that whole, the rich get richer thing, is because the rich, quote unquote rich, like people that understand money know that it's, you know, the harder you work for money, the more you're going to get taxed. Like your goal is to take that taxed income and shift it over into cash producing assets that are taxed in a much more friendly way. And you kind of hit on that, but that's just something I feel like a lot of young dentists maybe don't fully appreciate until you become a business owner and understand our tax code.
Yeah, I think that's, you hit the nail on the head. As much as the politicians will talk about wanting to tax the business, the corporations and things like that, and the tax code is incentivized for businesses and real estate, like you said, because they house, either the real estate houses businesses which employ people, and if you invest or buy in a business that employs people, employing people and having a low unemployment rate is a big part of our economy. So they definitely incentivize you for that.
Okay, so for the sake of time, let's go to scenario number two. So we talked about, like, you know, some goals for a young dentist that's not quite at practice ownership stage, but we're saving high yield savings account, money market, putting money away. So now let's say you've got a young practice owner. They either bought into a practice or they did a startup and they're just in their first couple years out, and now are the office is profitable, they're cash flow positive, and now they're in this dilemma where, okay, the office is making money. We've got, you know, our overhead paid. I'm taking some money home. My tax liabilities are starting to go up, and now they're kind of stuck. You know, this might be a 2 to 5 year out of the startup gate. But then this is kind of a situation that I'm in personally, so I'm interested in your answer here. But you're kind of at the crossroads of, I've got a large practice loan for $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $700,000. And maybe you've got an interest rate from between 3 to 7% on it. And you're thinking, you know, I've kind of got a house I live in. So I've got my mortgage locked in. That's all taken care of. I've got a student loan plan. So that's taken care of, you know, but this practice loan, you know, it's a big expense, like a big line item expense every month that you just kind of get tired of paying and looking at. And so you ask yourself, does it make sense to pay off this practice loan early? Most people in conventional wisdom will say no. But I thought this might also be a good time to talk about, you know, traditional accounting will say, well, you should keep that around as long as possible because you can write off the interest of that, but might be kind of like letting the tax, what is the saying, letting the tax tail
wag the dog.
Yeah. So it feels like it's that. And then this would be a good chance for you to talk about the phantom tax that you talked about. Cause I think people, I didn't realize this till recently as well, but you know, anytime you're paying principal on a loan, you're paying it with after tax dollars. So anyways, what would you advise a young practice owner who's got a big practice loan and they're trying to think, do I just take that money home and invest it in other brokerages or save it for other things? Or do I get more aggressive about paying down my practice loan when most people would advise against that?
So again, save cash and pay off debt. Invest in yourself first. Once you own a business, that business becomes probably your best investment, your best asset. You got to remember it's an asset. And if you took out a debt to buy it, that's no different than taking out a mortgage on a property. You don't fully own the asset until the debt's free and clear. The answer to what should I pay off first, or you know, how should I look at this, all goes back again to the cash flow. I don't care what the interest rate is. I care more about what the payment is. If it's a practice loan, it's probably going to be a shorter term debt, call it 7 years, and it's going to have a higher monthly cash flow. Okay, and everyone should find a resource either online or a calculator, an app, and have a loan amortization schedule. And you should plug in your loan balance. You should plug in how many years are remaining on the term and the interest rate, and match it to your payment and look at the remaining amount of scheduled interest. And then plug in if you were able to afford an extra $500 or $1,000 a month, how would that change the remaining scheduled interest? People still don't pull the trigger and do that and pay it off because paying that interest is a slow bleed. They feel like they don't, you know, as long as they can make their payment, they're not going to pay it off early. But in a business, there is an additional byproduct beyond just the monthly payment of cash flow when it comes to paying down debt. And I oftentimes in presentations, or it's like one of my big topics I talk about, I say, you know, debt creates a phantom tax. And everybody really starts to kind of turn their head and raise their eyebrows. And they're like, what do you mean? It's not phantom income. I don't mean like about phantom income. A phantom tax is a tax that you have to pay where the money is not in your bank account. It may have already left your bank account. You didn't bring the money home. And if you ever get to the end of the year and you've spoken to a CPA and you feel like you got a tax surprise and you're like, I owe this tax on this profit. They're like, you had this much profit in your business. You're like, but that profit's not in my bank account. How come, where is it? How come I owe the tax? It's most likely has to do with your debt. So the example I give is you have a loan payment that's $5,000 a month and 2,000 of it is interest, 3,000 of it is principal. That 2,000 of interest, to be fair, is deductible and everyone needs to live and plan by the 40% tax rule. So on the 2,000 of interest that you pay, 40% of that's 800 bucks. You're going to get a little deduction of or savings of 800 bucks. But on the 3,000 of principal, all debt is paid off with after-tax dollars, all debt, whether it's personal or it's held in your business. Most likely, you got a tax deduction up front for what you were buying. Might have been a business, might have been a piece of equipment. So you can't deduct the total payment because that would be double dipping. And that principal portion in my example, 3,000 a month, in addition to that 3,000, you owe 40% tax on that, $1,200. So adding it all up, I had a $5,000 payment. I got $800 savings on the interest, the $2,000 interest deduction, but I generated tax. I owed tax on the $3,000 of principal. That was $1,200. So really, it was my $5,000 payment plus a net additional $400. Okay, in that first year, let's say. Well, over time, the thing about a loan payment is the interest portion goes down over time. That's good. That means you're paying less interest, but it's bad because you have less deduction. And the principal portion that you're paying off goes up. That's good because you're paying more and more principal and getting the loan paid off, but it's bad because you're going to generate more phantom tax. So especially in those last few years of the loan, the majority of it's all principal and you're paying 40% tax on that principal portion. That's how debt suffocates cash flow because you know that it's that 5,000 payment plus the 1,200 of tax you owe. It's 6,200 bucks. That was way more cash flow than just the payment. And I never realized that before. A CPA could never explain it to me. At some point, I kind of did the math and it dawned on me. And then I went and ran it by CPAs and tried to challenge it and see if I was wrong. But that's how it works. And a lot of business owners just don't realize it.
Yeah. You explained that really well, better than I could summarize. But yeah, the big line that you said, anytime you're paying down principal on a loan, you're paying it with after-tax dollars, even if people on TikTok and so like to generalize it like, oh, you buy this and, you know, the whole thing's tax-free. And it's like, well, it doesn't really work like that. So I like that you clarified that. So my follow-up question could be, you know, if you, let's say you paid off or you got that debt out of there, you paid off that debt, and now you've got the entire $5,000 in free cash flow now to spend on other things to start saving back in situation one for buying, you know, cash positive assets. Is that what you have to do? How do you avoid the phantom tax? Is it kind of an inevitable thing if you already have the debt to finish paying it off, pay the, you know, you got to pay that toll, got to pay the phantom tax on the principal, and then just to avoid the phantom tax, buy cash flowing assets that provide passive income like real estate or dividend producing stocks or whatever, or something like that. But how do you get around, what's the solution to that, to the phantom tax?
Well, inside your business, there is no solution until it's gone inside your business. Okay. So you're using pre-tax cash flow to pay for things, but then you owe the tax on that principal portion. That's why we say it's really an after-tax payment. Hopefully you can save up enough cash. You have to increase your income, increase the practice revenue so that you have enough margin that you can have enough margin to pay chunks down or pay extra down every month and be able to cover that phantom tax until it's gone. The other really, really important thing though is make a commitment to yourself that whatever payments you have today and anytime you sign up for a new payment, have those payments committed for life. Okay, so if you have that $5,000 payment and that loan gets paid off, that payment needs to either go to another debt or it needs to be automated to a cash savings account. Save cash, pay off debt. Never, ever lose that cash flow. What most people do is they don't commit the cash flow. So they paid it off. They reached their goal of paying off the debt. And then the $5,000 a month just gets included with the rest of their cash flows. They either need to, again, automate it to the next loan with the smallest balance, or they need to automate it to a cash savings account inside the business, or they need to automate it to part of their take-home income, their distribution. The best way I can think of to over-prepare for both taxes and when including all the debt is, you know, most businesses are S-corps right now. Most businesses in dentistry are S-corps. But even if you're an LLC, the distribution portion of what you take home is the wild, wild west. You know, people just transfer money from the business account to their personal account. And they never withhold the tax on that transfer. Like if they have a W-2 salary, that's withheld for them. But then when it comes to their distribution, they just like take money home. And they pretend like, oh, there's no tax. You need to have a tax account inside your business to filter 40% tax. So if you want to take $10,000 gross distribution out of the business, $4,000 needs to go to the tax account in order for 60% or $6,000 to come home. And if you need a bigger amount than that at home, and you got to do the math backwards, let's say you needed $10,000 at home to pay for your gutters repair or something like that. Well, the $10,000 represents an after-tax payment you have on something, and you need to do the math backwards. $10,000 divided by 0.6 is $16,667. You got to put $6,667 to a tax account in order to take $10,000 home. So people, I think, underestimate and don't set aside their tax money, and they accidentally, in most cases, mismanage and spend the tax money, and then they like to play naive at the end of the year. How do I owe the tax? Where's the money? So I think, you know, as long as you withhold 40% of every distribution from that you take, you're going to be pretty well off in your tax burden. It'll cover 80 to 90% of the total number. You should be good. That's been my experience personally and what our clients that implement that do. And it is important. Use the tax account in the business so that your CPA can see where you make those tax payments from. If you do it out of your personal account, they can't see it.
Sure. Yeah. It helps from a bookkeeping standpoint. So let's transition to a more seasoned, mature pediatric practice. And I'd didn't realize that you had worked for an office that kind of went through this. So you kind of have firsthand experience of seeing a small solo doc expand to 8 associates and everything else. So I'm interested on your take on this, but maybe you are at this point where you have been open for like 10 or 15 years. You're a pediatric dentist in your maybe mid-40s, mid-career, and you're kind of at this point where, okay, I paid off my practice loan. My student loans are close to, if not out of here. So there's not a lot of debt that I'm paying down, maybe just working on a mortgage, practice is paid off. We're kind of maxed out at the amount of dentistry we can do. Maybe we're a $1.4 million practice with a 50% overhead, just a good solid practice. We're coasting, everything's good. But at this point, you know, everything's paid for, there's no deductions, you know, you're going to take the tax burden every year just because there's not a lot to write off. And so now it seems like you really just have a big tax problem. So maybe you got a more traditional stuff because you're starting to run out of places to put your money. You put some money into a practice 401k with profit sharing, but every year you have that discussion where you get hit with this big tax bill and your quarterly tax payments are huge. So you start to think, okay, what are some other things I can do to lower taxable income? And then you start transitioning into conversations about purchasing real estate. Now's the time mid-career to like build the big building if you're going to do that, and maybe expand and grow because of all these tax write-offs. You're going to buy the land, which you can't depreciate, but you can build this big $2 million building and cost segregated and depreciate a ton of it. And you start talking about becoming a commercial realtor and owning commercial real estate from that standpoint. But speak to those practice owners. Do you kind of advise that mid-career practice owner where things are going well to consider going the route of taking on the commercial real estate debt? You know, hopefully they've saved up cash like you've kind of advocated for. Do you tell them let's pull the trigger and build a practice because a dental office, the commercial space is a great investment? Or are you against just kind of riding it out and you know, socking money away into traditional stocks until they want to retire? I mean, sure, there's right answers both way, but like, what do you kind of advise these sort of midlife practice dentists that have a good thing going on what direction to go?
Yeah, so there's a lot packed in there. So first comment I'll make is that I often tell people, I go, if one of your big goals is not to pay tax, don't sit still. Okay, people I think have this fantasy that they're going to like work to pay off the practice and get it stable and max it out and debt's paid off, and then they can just relax and sit still. Well, that's when you pay the most tax. Okay. You do have to be in constant reinvestment, and that can be in your business. That can be in something like the real estate for your business, or that can be in real estate or other investments outside of your business. But you're going to have to make constant investment to constantly avoid tax. If that's one of your goals. Most people I've learned in real practice just aren't willing to make those constant investments, or they may not have the financial ability totally to make constant investments after they've made their first large investment or another large one like the building. Buying a building for your business. So first of all, if you max out your space, which I quantify that as $35,000 per month per chair that you have plumbed, is probably the maximum revenue you can do. Okay, times 12 months, right? So to calculate what that is. So if you have 10 chairs times 35,000 a month times 12 months, calculate what that maximum revenue is. And that should be your goal, to maximize that space. If you're already there, you've already maximized the revenue for that space, your business is going to be at a plateau, and a plateau eventually leads to decline, or at least decline in profitability, but possibly revenue as well. Because if your schedule's too far booked out, people are going to go somewhere else that's faster and more convenient. You're going to see that decline in revenue. And then every year you have your costs go up, your inflation, your cost of supplies, your cost of your team with cost of living adjustments. Expenses will always rise on you. Don't ever live in fantasy thinking that they won't. Your growth in revenue has to exceed the growth in expenses for you to continue to be profitable. Okay, so if your expenses grow faster than your revenue, you're in decline. Profitability and potentially later in decline in total revenue. So it's time to expand your space. And if you can own your own building, it's one of the greatest things. When you own the building, it's technically a personal asset. You own it personally, and yes, you put it in an LLC and all that. But your business has the ability to buy, pay for, and pay off an asset that you can own personally that will provide you rental income for the rest of your life. And I think it's one of the best forms of real estate and rental income is dental real estate because of all the sticky plumbing, the expensive plumbing that's there. It can always be a dental practice. It probably always will be. And dentists can't relocate their business. They're a great tenant. They can't just abandon you. If you can do that using your business, the tax deductions are massive. And here's the great part. Normally with real estate, it's a passive investment. And you get passive deductions. That means you can't use those passive deductions against your active income. But when you buy a building for your practice, there is a special grouping election that the CPA will file for you to notify the IRS that this building and this building LLC and this business of this dental practice over here are owned by the same person. They are one. It is a owner-occupied space. Then that converts the passive losses from depreciation on that real estate to active. You're able to group them with your active taxable income from your business. That is the most beautiful thing there is. In most cases, building the building large enough and what things cost today, in most cases, we have clients and me myself, when we did it for our building, when you apply those losses, they become active and you apply them against your business, you may not pay tax at all in the year that you finish that building, possibly for a couple years. Here's the thing. That is a great time to improve the other areas of your life. If you will have a tax account, if you will set aside 40% of every distribution, understand the 40% tax on your profit from your business. If you set that aside and at the end of the year, they say, nope, you don't owe any tax, you're going to have a large, probably six-figure amount sitting in the tax account that you get to now take home tax-free. The question is, can you use that to pay off a debt in full, whether it be your student loan, your home mortgage, or any other debt that can free up more cash flow, right? If you do the wise thing with that, it really is a very powerful financial reset for a lot of people.
Chris, you answered these questions really well, and I like how I got good direct answers. There wasn't a lot of beating around the bush with these. So yeah, I appreciate the way you addressed that because you definitely answered my question here. So as we kind of start wrapping up, is there anything, I have a final question about just like one of your services and how people can reach out. Is there anything I didn't cover, anything you wanted to hit on that I think we've covered a lot on our three scenarios here, but anything I didn't hit yet you wanted to still touch on, or did we do a pretty good job here?
I think we did a great job on the subject of debt. I want to say that just remember every dollar paying down debt is a dollar that's increasing your net worth, and that everyone should really totally calculate their net worth because that's the scorecard. As you're paying down debt, there's no immediate gratification. So a lot of people give up on it and go do something more fun or fancy with the money. But debt is one of the few areas, when I was investment licensed, I was not legally allowed to use the word guarantee. If I was investment licensed, I couldn't say that on this podcast. But you can legally use the word guarantee with debt. Every dollar paying down debt is a dollar increasing net worth. That's a guarantee. Debt is guaranteed. It's contractual. It's scheduled. And it's true compound. Okay, on that interest. I think that if I drop one more little nugget off the subject of debt, the next one where I think that really as a business owner, you're given bad advice because you're taking advice for the general public. A business owner should really check themselves on if they should be maxing out retirement accounts like a 401k when they have a business. Once you own the business, your job is to maximize and grow that asset. And whether you put a dollar in reinvesting into that business to grow it, or you put a dollar into a 401k, it's the same tax deduction. So I really encourage practice owners to reinvest into marketing, hiring, training, to grow that asset of your business. It's going to grow a lot faster and you have a lot more control over it before putting the money and locking it in the lockbox of the 401k. You're no longer in control of that money. You no longer have access to it once you put it in the 401k. So it's about a matter of cash flow and predictable return on investment. And if dentistry didn't have such a great return on investment, averaging 30% return annually on the collections of take-home income, nationwide. If that wasn't true, private equity and DSOs would not be wanting to invest in dentistry. So I guess I'll kind of leave it and summarize it there again. Invest in yourself first. Invest in your business next to create cash flow beyond your income, beyond just your working income. Invest in a home for your business in the real estate for your practice. Then maybe start thinking about real estate outside of your business. But avoid the traditional things because they're not there to serve you. They're there to serve the financial industry and the government. So whether you put $66,000 in the 401k profit sharing or $66,000 into marketing to get new patients, if you know your acquisition cost, you know your average revenue new patient per new patient, you can go on Shark Tank and say that, you'll realize it's a much, much better, more controllable return putting it in your business. So why are you doing it? People still do it blindly. They just kind of, that's what I'm supposed to do. I have chosen that. We have a 401k and matching in our CPA firm. All of my accountants want it. I don't put a single red penny of my own money into it. I'd actually rather sometimes just pay the tax. And so I have my after-tax amount free to use and go buy more passive income. And on that passive income, on the real estate, for example, I pay zero tax on the rental income for a period of time. And I got to keep buying that those assets to keep the tax at zero. And I can't sit still. And I will do that for the rest of my life. And eventually my working income will go away and all I'll be left with is my passive income at zero tax. So that's where I'll leave it for now. And hopefully we can record another great episode and dive deeper into that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that sounds good. We didn't get a chance to talk a lot about, you know, I know that you personally invest in some like actual hard and fast dental offices, brick and mortar dental offices, just anybody you talk to that actually owns a dental office. I've really yet to meet somebody that years down the road has said, yeah, that was a bad investment. Like, you know, it's pretty, dentists are a good tenant, as you know, and it's a pretty sure thing there. But let me, as we wrap up, I guess I had a question. If you're listening to this and wanted you to, do you have a service where if somebody's listening and maybe they have an existing CPA and that's all set up and they've got somebody doing their bookkeeping and everything's dialed in, whether it's a local bookkeeper or CPA or one of the big, you know, dental CPAs, do you guys have a service where you can just take a look or do like a snapshot or for a fee instead of transferring everything over right off the bat? Do you guys have a service where somebody listening can call you up and say, hey, Chris, I kind of liked what you talked about today. Like, can I call you and kind of explain my situation or let you look at my practice P&L and here's what I'm doing, or just kind of like a one-time sign of advisory fee instead of, you know, because as you know, like there's can be headaches when your one accountant is used to doing everything. It's kind of hard to do a breakup and move things over. So do you guys kind of offer a service like that?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of different answers. So the first answer, at least, you know, under Profi, whether it's a somebody buying their first practice or if you just want somebody to take a look, we'll charge $1,500 and we'll take a look at the whole picture and give you our opinion, give you some action items. And then you can choose if that's enough, too much for you to do with your current provider and you want to, you know, look further and engage with Profi. Outside of the tax and accounting, if you want somebody to look at the big picture, the consulting that I do fee-based consulting, but it's a minimum $10,000. And I charge that because I only want people that are really serious about building their business, investing in themselves and their business. And we look at the next 10 years of your life. And it's the full scope of your business and how it drives your personal income and how that enables you to, you know, build the personal life that you want. I do that through a separate company that I have called Provider Planning. There's nothing to sell to you, and that's why I charge you the fee, because I'm going to tell you the truth, and sometimes that's going to piss off your financial advisor too. I get a lot of nasty phone calls from financial advisors because I've told their clients to, like I said, borrow from 401ks and cash things out, pay off debts. Those things may not serve those financial advisors, but when I have somebody write down on paper the things that they want in their life, and usually in the top three, they write down, I want to be debt-free. I say, well, I can show you how to do it. It's with math, no assumed rate of return. I want to see how bad you really want that thing. Are you willing to stop doing some of the sacred things that you've always done in order to achieve that? It's really just, at its core, though, it's becoming a cash flow ninja. I mean, cash flow Jedi, however you want to say it. It's just focusing always on cash flow. So yeah, I mean, I take phone calls from everyone with no, you know, no promotion or solicitation. I'm happy to see if I can help someone out on a limited basis, or talk about engaging further, whether that's in ProFi or any of our other companies or services we offer.
Cool. If what's a good contact info if somebody wants to get more info or just kind of schedule a phone call? Are you an email guy or a phone number? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
I'm typically an email guy. Best one is info@profi2020.com. That's profi2020.com. Check out our website. Check out our YouTube channel. We're building a bigger studio right now, and we're going to launch a lot more content next year. But you can find us on all social media at profi2020.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you joining me and hopping on to do this. And I, you know, you said earlier we could have a second conversation sometime, maybe more real estate based or something. But, you know, I'm a dentist, but I'm a lifelong learner, and I like to continue to talk and learn more about the finance stuff we didn't learn in dental school. So I appreciate you kind of enlightening me, and let's do it again sometime, and we'll have a bourbon, like for real, clink the glass in person next time we do it.
Well, I'm going to have one right now. So thanks for having me, Casey. I really appreciate it. And cheers.
Cheers, Chris. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Brews and Tiny Teeth podcast. Be sure to DM our host, Casey Goetz, on social media with any listener questions, comments, or tough clinical situations. We'll see you next week for another unfiltered episode.